when I had conversation with nutritionists and we start talking about the diet composition, and we need to make sure that the MDF is right. And I agree 100% that that's critical component, diet composition. But it's that diet that we spend so much time, perfecting it, doesn't get to the cow, it's meaningless, right? And who is going to get that diet to the cow? The people. Who is going to weigh, who's going to mix it, who's going to deliver that diet is our people. So we got to make sure that they are well-trained.
A well-trained team is key to keeping everything running smoothly, from herd health to reproduction and feeding. And with the support of technology like SmaxTech's Bolus system and AI-driven insights, employees can make faster, smarter decisions for better herd management.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Mycotoxins can threaten feed and cattle performance. DSM Firmenich offers a portfolio of solutions to help mitigate the impact of mycotoxins in your feed.
With early detection in health, reproduction, and feeding, SmaxTech future-proofs your dairy operation. Excellent, a novel product for the management of hypocalcemia. It's uncomplicated excellence. Volac, unlocking ruminant potential through nutritional solutions for a sustainable future. Priority IAC, the only company bringing the fields of microbiology and nutrition together. Adiseo USA, producers of Smartamine M and MilkPay.com.
All right, welcome everybody to this episode of the Dairy Podcast Show. I'm your host for today, Gail Carpenter. I'm joined by Dr. Adrian Berrigan from Penn State University. I think this is our third time recording together, so you are officially my most interviewed podcast guest.
Gail Windhorn, thanks.
And it's always great to chat with you. So I was really excited to see that we got to, that we had a chance to talk again. And I actually, we were talking before I started recording. I was trying to think of new things to talk about because we've talked about inflammation, we've talked about metritis, and I was like, oh, I'm going to have to come up with like a different topic. And I've been spending a lot of time recently thinking about personnel training. And so I was getting excited to pick your brain about that. And then I saw in the questionnaire that that's what you had wanted to talk about too. So that's how you know we've been interviewing too much, is we're starting to think alike. So.
Right, exactly. And it's I was in the same page, Gail, about like, okay, what is something new and exciting? Because inflammation, I mean, always is good stuff coming out from inflammation. But I think that people are a little getting a little tired of hearing me about talking the same thing over and over. So
yeah, well, we should probably introduce you. So I feel like we know each other pretty well at this point, but not everybody maybe has listened to all of our interviews. So you're an associate professor, an extension veterinarian at Penn State. But do you want to just give a brief little bit about your background and how you got where you are?
Yeah, definitely, Gail. So, well, thanks again for the invitation. It's always a pleasure and so fun to be here and to get to interact with you, Gail, and just with the audience. It's a great program. A little bit of myself. My name is Adrian Barragan. I am originally from Argentina, so that is where the strong accent came from. Although I have been working for many, many years and trying to get rid of that, it's not going to happen.
It works for you. Don't try to get rid of it. Yeah.
All right. Glad to hear that. But anyhow, Spanish is my native language, and that is sort of the main link to this area of personal training, personal management, human resources, so a little bit of what we're going to be talking about today. But a little background of my career, I graduated at veterinary school in the University of La Plata back in 2010. I practiced as a private veterinarian in some large field lots in the area close to Buenos Aires province. Buenos Aires City as well. And then in 2012, the opportunity to get out of the country came out. And that was something that I always wanted to do, just get out for a couple months and just, get to see new stuff and management, stuff like that. So I came out with the plans to get back to my country in 6 months after that, 12 years ago. After, you can see now where I am. So the plans didn't go as expected, as is usually sort of what happened. But anyhow, career and personal, so I met my wife and life just took two different routes. So I ended up doing a master and a PhD at The Ohio State University. You always hear me talking about that. Under Dr. Gustavo Schunemann advising. So Gustavo was my advisor for the master. And then for the PhD, I had Dr. Bass, Santiago Bass. And then it has been already 7 years and a half since I've been in this position at Penn State. As you say, I'm an extension veterinarian, and that's basically what is sort of like an expert consultant for private veterinarians and also for producers or nutritionists or anybody on sort of the animal health related field. And my main sort of duties as extension veterinarians, I do a lot of consultations, what we call field investigations, where we help troubleshoot animal health related issues. And with that, it comes a huge component of personal training, mm-hmm. with the part of like, we need to develop these protocols, develop these practices targeted to prevent the disease. But we have to train the people, our people, to do the right thing, to do it right, right? And as many of you in the dairy industry know, about 52-53% or so of our workforce, they are Spanish-speaking workers, mm-hmm. right? And not many of those speak English fairly well. So being bilingual, Spanish-English is definitely a great skill to have in this field. And I have leveraged that skill, and I have sort of, that's how all this area of research and extension work has built through my career years.
Maximize profitability and herd health with early detection in animal health, reproduction, and feeding. The most advanced bolus technology and professional support from agricultural experts make this possible with SmaxTech, the health management system that future-proofs your dairy operation.
No, I've been thinking a lot about this recently. There's been, well, I think about this, I'm in education and extension. So I think the longer you're involved in research or with education, either through teaching or through extension or whatever, you start to realize that like the people are so important, because you can memorize the textbook, you can know exactly what the textbook says should happen. But if you can't get the people side of it to work, then it's not gonna, then it doesn't matter, right? Everything that you've learned, everything that you know, doesn't matter. The cows can't read your mind, right? The cows won't do things because they're supposed to do them. They do things because of the people that are doing the actual hands-on management stuff.
Yeah.
And I think so much in animal science and dairy science, we spend a lot of time thinking about like the facts, the biology. We really want to understand the biology mm-hmm. and the science. But the science doesn't work unless you have the people side of it too. Right.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that I see this as sort of like when I had conversation with nutritionists and we start talking about, oh, the diet composition, and we need to make sure that the MDF is right. And I agree 100% that that's critical component, diet composition. But it's that diet that we spend so much time, you know, like perfecting it, doesn't get to the cow, mm-hmm. is meaningless. Right. And who is going to get that diet to the cow? The people. Who's going to, you know, weigh, who's going to mix it, who's going to deliver that diet is our people. So we got to make sure that they are well trained.
Yep.
And when we think about training, one thing that is really common in our field, Gail, is that we train people on the job,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is okay. I don't say that has to be removed, but the main challenge with training people on the job is that they get to know how to do things, but they don't know why they do it. And that is a key part that we have to educate our people, not only to make sure that they do the right thing, but also to help troubleshoot when something goes wrong, or to avoid drifting when something gets easier one way. It should be okay. No, it should not be okay, because this is the consequence of doing it wrong, right? But if you don't know what is the consequence, well, let's just try it. Most likely it's going to be fine, right?
Yeah, that's so true. If you don't understand the why behind why you're doing things, it's really easy. I think drift is really important to mention there too, procedural drift, because if you don't understand why you've been trained to do things a certain way, you're like, yeah, you know what? I can do this more efficiently. I can cut X step or Y step. If you don't understand why each of those steps is there the way it's supposed to be had, mm-hmm. Then it's really easy to start. And I'm not saying cutting corners like people are trying to be lazy, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done at the dairy, mm-hmm. and people want to be efficient and get the job done. And there are some things that sometimes, I don't know, we both work at universities, so we both have to do parts of our jobs where you're like, what, this doesn't make sense, right? Like all of the steps we have to do for all of the, then, and it would just make our job so much easier if I didn't have to do all of this training in this form and XYZ. And if I think somebody who's doing hands-on work, it's the same thing, right? If they're like, well, why am I think of an example I heard recently, a milker that not understanding to wipe the teats, right? And because she was short and she couldn't reach, right? And so a lot of cows were getting missed because like the 2-year-olds with the really high udders, you know, if you can't reach them, then you can reach to dip, but you can't necessarily reach to wipe them off, right? And if you don't understand why that's important, we give them a bunch of benchmarks about how quickly we want them to work, how much turnover we have in the parlor, when we need to get this shift done by. And if you're internalizing all of that, but not why each of these steps need to be done in the way it's done, then I don't blame you for skipping things. Yeah,
exactly. No, and I agree. That's what I will say. I was doing some training and some consulting in it last week. And it's like one thing that I was point out is it's not that people don't do the right job or the job right because they don't want it or because they want to be lazy. Most of the time, at least in my 12 years or so of experience training personnel in the States, is that they just either don't understood or they don't have the proper training. Mm-hmm. When it comes to this training, one of the most popular ones that we do is the Kelvin Assistant. A really sensitive topic that I always talked about is utilizing the calf shack, how to utilize that tool in the proper way, because it's a very delicate, I don't know if delicate is a word, but it's a really strong tool. And I always encourage that to use as a last resort. And I have walking to farms that I had to stop those guys because there are some animal welfare concerns there and say, wait a minute. And I know it's not their fault, but let's stop it now. And, we'll try something else, and then we'll talk over about this and how to use and things like that. And again, you cannot get mad at them because they are just trying to do their job. And time is of the essence in the industry. That's usually one really lacking resource that we have. We don't have enough time. Right? 24/7 is just not enough for us.
Yeah.
So I agree with you, Gil. It's just like trying to keep up with the work and being efficient. Sometimes if we don't know the whys, it lead us to procedural drift, as you said.
Mm-hmm. I heard a statistic last week that what was it? It costs 150% of a person's salary with every turnover that you have. Is that something like that? Right? Like it costs more to hire and train a new person than to retain somebody who could do a good job. And just hasn't necessarily like gotten the best training or the most complete training. Replacing that person is not easy and not cheap.
Well, yeah, that's a study. It's getting old now, but it's still so relevant. I think it was 2013 or so. Study published that they estimate sort of what will be the cost of rehiring entry level and also a manager sort of type. The manager was 150. And the entry level was about 100 or so of their salary, annual salary, right? Just to rehire. And those are those invisible costs that we usually don't see on a daily basis, but at the long run. And those costs are related to the time you spend searching for the candidates, the time you spend actually interviewing the candidate, the time you spend, all the paperwork related to hiring that person, but also that learning curve. That learning curve have been estimated by some studies to be around 14 days when somebody has some background.
Yeah.
Now, when you think somebody is fresh, that's probably about a month that you're just going to be losing money because of poor personal performance until that person gets, And I always say, even with the most experienced milker or maternity area guy or whoever is the people who are hiring, they might be super experienced and they might be super knowledgeable about working on another farm that they never have worked before. Mm-hmm. So, we all work with the cows, but we don't work the same way.
Right.
I have seen like hundreds of cows, and I can assure you, not even one farm had the same management. All of those farms, they had some slight difference here and there, and that is where it takes time for them to get used to learn and to become efficient and have a good performance on it. And that's where you see all those losses, invisible at first, but they definitely are there. The importance on training on that is key, I think. Mm-hmm. Not only to avoid that cost, but also to retain, as you say, Gail, to retain the people. sometimes, you know, you say, sometimes I have these trainings where I go to a farm and I have employees that never have worked with cows before, right? And I always say, I like that population of workers because they are fresh. They don't have any unconscious bias, any bad habit there. They are, their brains are fresh, never have worked with cows. So now we can put the good stuff there, right? And it takes a little bit, perhaps longer, for them to get really up to speed compared to somebody that already worked with cows. But when you get there, man, those people are the ones that do exactly what you want them to do because they never had done it before. And the only way they learn it is how you told them, right?
Walk me through this a little bit. So we understand, I think we've established that it's important for people to understand why they're doing what they're doing. You talked about, you know, you're dealing with people at all different levels of understanding and experience. Sometimes, like you said, and I've seen this with students too, that it sometimes makes it a little bit harder if you have to have like habits to break or misconceptions to break. But still, at least if somebody comes from a farm background, they hopefully have like at least a common understanding of the language that we're using and the terms that we're using. And when we're talking about immigrant labor, we might even be talking about differences in literacy even, right? Mm-hmm. Right. And written communication might not necessarily be the most effective form of communication. So as you're developing some of these trainings, what are you thinking about when you're trying to you don't want to like throw them right into the deep end and all of the in-depth physiology and everything. But you also don't want to talk down to them, right? So how do you find that? How do you find that good middle ground?
I mean, that's a great point. And I mean, the knowledge that they had to get is essentially the same, but as you say, it's how you deliver, right? Mm-hmm. And one thing, I mean, we actually done a few studies with Gustavo when I was doing my master. And even Gustavo published one before about sort of comparing having an oral presentation and hands-on demonstration and sort of our outcome variable was gain in knowledge. So how much they knew before, how much they knew after. Very simple design and actually a very open-eyed sort of a type of study, super easy to understand as well. But we found definitely a great, I think it was a 23, 25% increasing knowledge when we use this combination of having the oral presentation and the hands-on. And the oral presentation, as you said, Gail, it cannot be, it has to be really visual.
Yeah.
Videos, pictures, has to be, even the people that has quite some literacy and well-educated, that population usually is not in a classroom taking classes for 8 hours. They have a minimum exposure to an actual formal lecture, if you might say. Mm-hmm. And if you ask me, when I finish vet school and I start working with cattle, 12, 14 hours a day, yeah, man, I will go back to college to do a seminar or something. And after an hour, my brain was tired because it's just like, this is getting used to, right?
Yep.
So I totally get it. So what? A few things on that. The oral presentation has to be very visual. So we have a lot of videos. We have a lot of pictures, short and concise messages. We had to get away from those long like paragraph of information there. They're not going to read it. You just talk it over, right? The other important component, they had to be brief. We tried to keep it 30 to 45 minutes, and it's better to do two sessions shorter than one session longer, right? And with that comes the combination of the hands-on. So whatever you taught them in this oral presentation, and we make it really visual and brief and sweet and with clear messages, then we're going to actually do it. So now the hands-on is going to be, let's go and do it. So we go, we milk cows, we go, we assist, we do a demonstration of a cow in a system. So they get to do everything they see. So now everything just sticks there because you not only learned about it in a presentation, but now you're doing it. So now that combination is really fixing in your brain and helping you retain that information.
Yeah, I think those are also really good lessons if you're teaching, right? And if you're like, even with adult education, with non-Hispanic folks, I think those are all like, probably the classroom sit and listen to lectures for 8 hours is not an effective way for any of us to learn. And especially true if you're not somebody who's accustomed to sitting in the classroom for extended periods of time. Yeah.
A comment to add there, Gail, with a different literacy and even different language. One thing that people may feel they're probably most unaware is that it's not only Spanish the language that you will find out there, right? With the non-English speaking workers. Many of even the Central American, South America immigrants, they speak a dialect.
Mm-hmm.
That is, I think it's about like 50 or 50 something different dialects that are out there. And when that, you know, came into place, sometimes these workers, the only language that they speak is that dialect. And there's one person in the group that speaks Spanish and the dialect. So it's going to translate.
Yeah.
So when you have those situations, you got to make sure that person that is doing all the translation gets it really well, because otherwise it's going to be like a, you know, I don't know how you call that game in English, but we have a game that's called the broken phone.
Telephone. Yeah.
Yep. You know, you tell one kid one thing, tell it to the next. By the time I get to the end of the line, it's a totally different message, right?
Yep. Yep.
So we got to make sure that initial message gets it really right. So when that happened, I really spent a lot of time with them. And the ones that do not speak the Spanish, the visual is key. So all these videos that we have developed with the years, all these good pictures, good images that, you know, you spend a lot of time gathering those years and years of, you know, your libraries of picture and video, visual libraries, mm-hmm. you build them, it takes time, but they're really beneficial, especially in those situations.
Yes. I want to kind of highlight some of what you were just talking about there with the dialects. And, you know, you might have a bunch of people who speak some of the same dialects on a farm. I was at a talk last week. You probably know who Jorge Delgado is with Alltech.
Mm-hmm.
He was talking, I was listening to a talk he gave last week, and it was, he called it Comunidad. So it was about community and building community. And he went through and talked about all these different things with employee training and retention.
Mm-hmm.
And he emphasized how important it is that they feel plugged in to a community outside of the farm, right? Because you can only work so many hours a day.
Yeah.
Even that, you know, everybody's got to sleep sometime. Everybody has to get off the farm sometime. And making sure that people feel connected to a community when they're not at work. Forgetting the name of the speaker he had alongside him, but she works, does some community work with immigrant communities up in the Twin Cities area. I've been spending a lot of time thinking about that since I saw that talk. Do you have examples of farms that you think are doing a really good job of that?
I mean, that's a great topic. And we're actually addressing that at the university level here. I'll tell you in a little bit, but you know, one hypothesis I have, and I just got to find a way to test it, is that when it comes to populations with low, with a small immigrant community, especially with the immigrant workforce, the turnovers, they're higher because they don't have that geographical ties to the community. And I agree 100% with Jorge there, because that is key. And that is not having that community is one of the main reasons of social isolation of this population of workers. One thing we're doing in the college, we developed this course. It's called Community Engage with Immigrant Workers. And what we do in this class, we go to the farm once. It's a full class, a three-grade full class, in the College of Agricultural Science here at Penn State. So we take the students once a week to two farms now. The idea is, as we get more resources, we're going to expand it, to help the workers speak English, speak better English. The key aspect of that, the key goal of that, is that they feel more comfortable to communicate outside of work in the community and start building those geographical ties, that community, right? Because here's the college, we have a really small Spanish or Latino community. If you go to Lancaster, Harrisburg, you know, down southeast in Pennsylvania, we have a huge Latino community. But in this area, and we still have a lot of large farms. Even actually, our largest farm is located here in Center County. a large estate farm. So we still have a large their industry, but we don't have a large Latino community. So that's sort of the goal we're trying to do. So by helping them to communicate better, they will start building those connections, that the community, and then that might help with two things. One, from the worker point of view, sort of helping with that social isolation, which is definitely a huge issue. You know, especially imagine, and I always put, you know, when we talk to the kid, to the kids, to the students, they started to feel old. I call them kids. you know, with the students, when I talk to them. So imagine that you go to a country where you do not speak the same language. You cannot understand anything that they tell you. And you're working 12 to 14 hours, 6 days a week, right? How long can you keep up with that? You know, it's a situation which is the social isolation is real, and especially when you have a poor work environment in place. And I'm going to tie that to your question about how the farm can do a better job there, especially for large farms. Our goal has to have the community there as well. Right. I was visiting some farms last week that they have, you know, about 50 or so employees that are Latino. Man, we have a town right there. Right. So you have a lot of people with the same backgrounds that is going to be, you know, they spend 12, 14 hours a day together, 66 days a week. That's going to be your community. But you have to foster that community throughout great work environment. If the work environment is neglected there, that community is not going to occur. It's going to start breaking down. It's going to have, you know, these clusters. And man, when you have those clusters, that is what's going to happen, because then it's like a civil war, you know, one cluster fighting with the other. So that is one thing that has to be avoided. And there are many things that can be done on those lines. You know, the social events, barbecues, end of the year, Christmas parties. There are many of the farms that I worked with. They have like soccer tournaments, you know, any sport on those lines as well. Any social activity that could be added outside of work, or even sometimes I encourage the producer when they have the capability, right? Because margins are tight. But if you have the capability to take 1 hour a week of work time, and instead of making them work, just pull them together to do something fun, man, that's a huge positive effect on work environment.
Discover Schooler's flexible and reliable dairy feed ingredient solutions to help support your herd's growth and well-being. Schooler is a trusted partner in dairy feed solutions, delivering high-quality feed ingredients when and where you need them. Discover an extensive portfolio of product options to fit your unique rations and cost parameters. Learn more at schooler.com/dairy. That's schooler.com/dairy.
We've done it again. We've already talked for like 25 minutes. So I feel like we could probably talk about this for a couple hours.
I agree.
But I want to kind of start talking about best practices. So what are some, you know, you mentioned take an hour of the week and do something non-work related, something fun. What are some other best practices when it comes to training personnel, building that community? What are some best practices that you have for producers?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you a little bit about this study that we did last year. We are almost getting out for publishing it. But we interviewed 150 employees across 10 dairy farms in Pennsylvania. About 50 or so were English speaking, and the rest were 100 or so that were Spanish speaking workers. And it was a human resources practices study. So it was a survey asking about what HR practices were they offer, what they would like, and stuff like that. But one question that really was shocking to see the results was like, what could your boss do better at shop, right? And the Spanish-speaking workers, as I was expecting, they say communication. And I said, well, that makes sense, right? They don't speak the same language. They don't, you know, they usually need a moderator or a translator to communicate. Perfect. Guess what the English-speaking workers said?
Communication.
Exactly the same, right? And that to me was shocking to see, because I didn't think that was the area, but it makes sense. And my hypothesis in this area is that as veterinarians and producers, nutritionists, we went through this route because we want to work with animals. We want to work with cows. And, you know, 20, 30 years ago, that makes sense when we have smaller farms, you know, with 80, like sort of what we still have sort of around here in Pennsylvania. But now with these 900, 1,000, 11,000 cows farms, you don't manage cows anymore. You manage people, right?
Right.
And I don't think that that's still, you know, I don't think that too many of our producers or managers, they like that part of, because, again, we were in the business for something else, right?
Yeah.
And the other thing is that there's not much resources out there. One thing that was shocking this study to see is the ag laws regarding regulations of HR for workers and even worker management, they're really... they're not as developed as other industry. So there's very lack of detail and a lot of like nothing there, basically. So it's basically free will or whatever you feel is better. So there's a lack of guidance, and there's also a lack of educational material. So that's something that we're trying to work on, just to give those resources to people. But, you know, going back to how can, you know, the main question, how can you have one is one of the best practices, I will say communication and regular communication, right? Having these team meetings, you know, at least once a month. And of course, when it's something that is timely sensitive, of course, you got to meet at that time as well. But at least once a month, just to check out what's going on, what you need, everything is good. Okay, what happened? Every time when there's a meeting, is something wrong? What do you do? Everybody is just waiting to
it's an intervention. To hear. Yeah,
exactly. So it has a negative connotation because that has been the nature or the trend. But we had to remove that, and we had to put these positive meetings, right? We're meeting to even this type of meeting to do something social as well. They're very beneficial, perhaps not every month, but, you know, do something social every 3 or 4 months, like a barbecue, you know, summer or the warm season is always a good time for that. But these communication meetings, they have to happen regularly, often, and with a more positive connotation, just to check out what's going on. You guys need something, right? And that really helped with that retention, the work environment, right? So when we think about the work environment, I think it's one of the most important factors to retain people. If we have a positive work environment, we're definitely going to want to retain. And again, this, as you said, Gail, it costs a lot of money to lose people. And it costs even more when you lose one of those, you know, 4 or 5 years, 4 or 5 years old, for saying one in the job old, workers that, you know, they are so much invested there on knowledge and have those, like, how to say, institutional knowledge, sort of, right? Or dairy, you know, for the dairy. So losing those one is even more detrimental because they are taking all that knowledge from the operation, from the history of the operation as well, right? Especially new dairy farms that they're, progressing and building, all that learning knowledge, like, oh yeah, we did this, but it didn't work, so we switch it. It's gonna go with him. You cannot train somebody else on that, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I always advise my producers and the people I work with, when you have the people like that, we gotta get the extra mile to retain, right? Because it's really really painful when we lose them.
I think a lot of times people hear communication and we need to get better at communication and they up their game on the written communication, right? We're going to have all these written SOPs out and people don't read very wordy SOPs. Like that's just, people don't even read long emails, right? Like,
yeah, I agree.
Yeah. I also like what you said about a positive work environment. I heard it's kind of buried in my head. I have not confirmed if this is like was decided based on, you know, accurate scientific investigation or whatever, but I heard a stat once and it's just buried in my head that you need at least 5 positive interactions for every 1 negative interaction. And I think a lot of times people think like, oh, you know, it's half and half. Like when I give negative feedback, I'm also giving positive feedback. But it's a 5-to-1 ratio, right? Think about how many positive interactions that means. And but it goes a long way to building a positive work environment. Unfortunately, building community and building a good work environment isn't necessarily easy, right?
No. And it doesn't happen overnight, as you say, Gil. It takes, years. And that's one thing that I think that it's worth the time to build the, I don't want to say protocol, but to build your program, to have accurate, objectives, goals with events, right? So how often you're going to do it? What's going to be do? What is going to be going on? Who is going to do it, right? So all those you need to spend. And again, time is up of the essence and it's always a lacking resource. But we need to try to find the time to put some brain power on that, right? How we're going to do it, how often, what's going to be, who's going to lead it, who's going to oversee, right? And also try to collect some feedback, right? I always say, when it comes to personal performance, a little more challenging, but with any sort of try or any type of change that we want to do in the firm, I always encourage the people that are doing the change to collect the data. Just get the data before and after, or even if you can do it at the same time, which personal training is a little more challenging on that, but just to collect the numbers and see if actually you're seeing that. For instance, with personal management, we'll look at turnover rate, right? And I know there's many other factors affecting that, even the politics and other social or cultural difference are there. Mm-hmm. But still, it's better than nothing when we collect some data on something that we're doing, right? Because that's going to, it's worth it. And even if it's not 100% accurate, it still will be enough to incentivate to keep moving forward that direction, right?
Absolutely.
One perhaps last comment on that. In this larger study, we found a few things that were interesting an aspect of sort of the demographic of the population, 150 employees is fairly large population across 10 dairy farms. And one thing that we saw in this when we asked about demographic is that the Spanish-speaking workers, overall, that the population was younger. Mm. And they also statistically younger and was statistically stay less time in the work. Compared to the English speaking. And again, that could be, the younger or the age might be related to some social differences or cultural difference from, what they're coming from their countries and whatnot. But then when you think about the turnover rate, I think it's due to that geographical connections that the English workers have. Right, because most of that's another thing that we ask. Most of the English workers, they were local. They had their family there. They had their wife. They had their mom, parents.
Yep.
They had their church. Their church. So everything was there. But for the Spanish workers, they didn't have anybody. Right. Maybe they had a relative working that farm, but when they live together. Right. So that is something also that. Sometimes I have farmers that are doing a great job, and then all of a sudden they lose 3 or 4 employees, right? Mm-hmm. And man, that is really devastating because you are investing so much time. And I try to bring a little bit of this data into the picture, say, hey, sometimes we can do the best from our side, but there are some demographics behind the population that is going to be, there might be a tendency for them to move more often. Right, mm-hmm. Just because of how their community or their demographics differ from other worker population. Yeah. So, and that helps sometimes helps, but it's as you say, it's it has to become part of a culture that we have to develop. It's a culture of improving our work environment, improving our personal management. And when we develop that culture and we have this program in place with defined goals and clear steps and, people do it, how long it's going to take it, when it's going to happen, then it just become natural. And now it's, after that, it's already in our daily basis.
Yep.
And then after that, it will take a little bit to build it, but when it's built, It's gonna be incredible the benefits we'll bring.
One thing I want to add is that the right tools and resources make all the difference in running a farm. Training isn't just for employees, it's also about making the most of the technology that supports our work. That's why SmaxTech offers full onboarding and training sessions in both English and Spanish, making it easier for dairy teams to fully utilize advanced herd monitoring solutions. If you'd like to learn more, remember to visit SmaxTech's website.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Our Yeast 40 ruminal and intestinal double modulation by ICC Animal Nutrition. Feed solutions that surpass expectations. Learn more about the benefits of working with Schooler. Visit schooler.com/feed. That's schooler.com/feed. Natural Biologics delivers cost-effective solutions to improve health and productivity, helping conquer the rumen health and immunity challenges your animals face. Your partner for extra animal performance, Berg & Schmidt Animal Nutrition. AgriTrack, leading traction solutions for herd health. Contact us today to boost safety, comfort, and savings for your herd. Invest in the best. Who would your cows choose? Modern solutions for modern cows with AHV. Contact us to beat biofilm-related issues in your herd. Elevate animal performance with Berg & Schmidt Animal Nutrition, your trusted ally in excellence. Their high-quality feed ingredients like coated nutrients and fat powders provide ruminants with extra energy, boosting health, productivity, and cost efficiency. Unleash your herd's potential with Berg & Schmidt.
You have already answered our three questions at least once. Because again, not everybody's heard you the first time. So what do you think makes a successful leader? We'll start with that one.
Yeah, let's start with that one. So I will say it's just that approach of thinking out of the box and defining the status quo. Just define that, right? So it's not accepted. Oh no, because it was what we have done for 50 years, we got to keep doing it. Why, right? And let's start asking why has been done. Is there any way to do it better, to do it more efficient, to do it with less resources? In a few farms that I visited a couple of weeks ago, that was a thing, I found a few practices. Say, why are you guys doing this? Oh, when I got here, they were doing this. Okay.
Yeah.
That is not a good answer. We got to think a little bit more about why it's happening, and is this the right way? Is there another way, right? When we think about innovation, that's how it happened, right? Quite often where we have practices, where we have tools that are helping us with a specific thing that we want to do, innovation happens when we start thinking out of the box about how can we get the same result with less of us, right? With less effort, with less resources, with less more efficient, right? So I think that's still my answer for that is just thinking out of the box, is define the status quo.
I used to have a quote on, and I'm not sure who it's from, but I used to have a quote on my desk that said, the most dangerous phrase in the language is, we've always done it this way.
That makes sense. Yep. That makes total sense.
And I know we're both academics, so I'm sure that we've heard that more than once.
I mean, when you think about how you do extension research,
that is
one thing that I always put into some of the best studies that we have done that we put together were based on, we're doing this way. Okay, but what about if we do this way? Right? Yep. Okay, let's test it. Let's do a trial. And then incredible trials come out and really innovative practices or protocols or I do a lot of treatment trials come along out of those conversations. Usually those conversations happen with the producers in the field, right?
Well, we're asking them a little bit out of order. So that's usually our third question, but I ask it first. So usually our first question is, what's your favorite dairy-related book or resource? But I'm going to switch it up on you because we've been talking about working with Hispanic labor. What advice do you have for somebody who wants to get better at their Spanish?
Oh, good question. Yeah, good question. Getting better, unfortunately, it takes time, right? The best approach to get better is just keep trying, right?
Yeah.
Especially when you have the environment. So I always talk to some of either veterinarians or farmers or English-speaking person say that, oh, yeah, I just want to get better at it. Say, hey, the guys are here. Just keep yeah. trying. You yeah. know, like when I came to the state, I have a really broken English, and I was ashamed to talk English until I realized, hey, if I don't talk, I'm not going to learn, right?
Yep.
And so I, you know, I just started talking and it was really broken. I slowly got better and then got studied and, you know, we are at this level now. When I talk to English speaking people and they told me about it, they just feel shy. I say, whenever you try to communicate in the same language, of the person that you're talking, at least from my point of view, I actually see that as that you're caring. That you're interested on learning my language to make my life better. So it's always come across like that. It's like you are, nobody will make fun of a person that's just trying to learn your language. Actually, I will be happy to see that, right?
Yeah.
And quite often that's, you know, of course there are the outliers here and there, but that's quite often the situation. So, you know, my advice would be try it as much as you can, no matter how broken it is, and try to find that time. Tablets these days, with the great Wi-Fi that we have everywhere these days, they're great because you can try it and something doesn't, you know, they don't understand. You just type in the tablet, put, you know, I have some farms that tablet is the main communication method to talk to mm-hmm. the Spanish workers. And they have this big tablet there. And even they have in the parlor, and when the manager came, they just bring the tablet with them, give it to the guy, and they just type it, and they just show it, and they just type it back and show it. Use those tools. You know, there are other, like, we actually did a little testing on some, like, audio aids. Actually, yeah, so you can say it's an app, and you can set the language that you receive and also the language that the other person will hear, so it translates automatically. And there were a few people in the parlor with the noise. It wasn't great, but if in the lunchroom actually were fairly good. So there are a few tools out there that you can use. But use that as an aid to keep you moving forward, right? Because at the end of the day, the message has to get across accurately, right?
Yeah.
But utilize those tools to get you, you know, get to the final line, but use it as an aid to improve your language. So I think that will be, you know, classes help. I'm going to say it does not help, but quite often those classes, they don't have the agricultural background.
Right.
And what you learn is really, you know, it's not that useful on the daily basis when you're working with cows.
Yeah.
And that happens a lot. You know, I have a number of situations where I go to a farm and say, oh no, we have the translator that came to do the training. And then I start asking questions about the training and, oh, you know, they have no clue what they were doing. And say, well, what was the background of the translator? No, it was a lawyer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I never seen a cow before, right? So when it comes to those situations, yeah, they might be able to translate it, but the message is not going to get across accurately,
yeah.
Right? So that is what I see with classes. You can take classes. It might help you to improve some of the basics, but not as beneficial on the daily, you know, task in the farm.
One of the speakers I was listening to suggested watching kids shows in Spanish. So I found out if you have Disney Plus, you can select different languages for like cartoons. And so I was watching Bluey in Spanish.
That's one of my daughter's favorite cartoons as well.
Yep.
It does help, yeah. And actually, my daughter were raising her as bilingual, so I only speak in Spanish to her. But every show that she watches, because she has so much English interaction from the family and the society here, so everything else is Spanish. And yeah, that's a great feature that you can utilize.
Yeah. So is Bluey Spanish pretty accurate then? If I keep doing that, okay.
Yes, I'll say so.
Not a lot about cows in there, but
right. But you know, you can make a cake, and you know, I see those episodes that they're making food, and then you know, so regular like daily basis stuff.
Yeah. So okay. So our third question. Again, I'm ad-libbing these a little bit. But usually I ask, what's your favorite non-dairy related book or resource? I know you spend a fair amount of time on the road. So I'm going to ask you, What have you been listening to while you've been driving recently?
Yeah, well, this podcast is always my top. So I try to keep up because you guys are so busy. But I listen a lot to this podcast show now. And then I try to, I mean, there are so many, especially when it comes to the podcast and the audio, has been incredible success. I think that it's one of the good things that COVID left that is this, right? Mm-hmm, the thing mm-hmm. that you can do in the road. So you can, you know, get some more knowledge in this dead time that we used to have. Now we are learning, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I will say that this one, I also have been in the Dairy Beef podcast show. I think it's a branch from this one as well. Because I work a little bit with beef cows as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm just always trying to get a little more knowledge on that as well, on areas that I'm not familiar with. So that is sort of the main area. And then I try to stay up with some of the other colleagues, the university webinars. You know, there are a few in Cornell, Mitch in Wisconsin, that they always come in with good, really great speakers. So I always try to be on top of those. But yeah, so that will be the main ones that I have been listening lately.
Well, and I think we are at our time, so we probably should wrap it up. Great as always to chat with you, and thanks for those podcast recommendations. And if anybody wants to hear more from Adrian, check out the Dairycast to hear him hosting, and maybe a good chance to brush up on some Spanish too. Sounds like.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and as always, the LinkedIn page, if everybody's interested in connect, I'm on LinkedIn, Adrian Morgan. And so I try to keep that pre-update, especially with the extension, all the articles, the webinars that we keep coming, and of course the peer review articles as well. So if anybody is interested in connecting, please do through LinkedIn.
Very good. With that, thank you for joining us today. And we'll see you on the next episode of the Dairy Podcast Show.
Thanks again, Gail.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.